is the New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Hello again. Welcome to the Country Hour, broadcasting again from the Royal Easter Show. And we've been moving around quite a bit. Hugh Hogan, who is our Central West reporter, he's here with me for the week. And we're now in the Pig and Goat Pavilion.
Yeah, and there's certainly some interesting smells wafting around, but it hasn't turned off the visitors. It's a very popular tent here today, or shed, I should say.
Yeah, I don't think the accent really is on production issues, because those tiny mini goats, they're pretty popular.
I don't know how much meat they produce.
No, not a lot. But they're jumping around all over the place.
They're very cute. They're very, very cute.
Mm. And also on the program, we'll be looking at the fact that today is Thank a Farmer Day. We'll be talking to the foundation, which give out a lot of money. And there's a big raffle that we'll be hearing about shortly as well.
And we'll also hear from some of the public, some of the Sydneysiders, what they think about Thank a Farmer
Thank
Day.
Thank a Farmer, that's right, indeed, which is very important to bridge that divide between city and country. But first up today, on the Country Hour, it's time to talk to some very special people. They're the President's Medal winners for this year. Well, it's actually for like 2 years. You had to wait 2 years to be crowned winners. Congratulations to Tracy and Vicky Nicol, who are the winners of the 2021 President's Medal for the Gumnut Patisserie. And actually, you have three shops, is that right?
Yeah, Barrel, Mittagong and Berrima.
Yeah, and you it's a fairy tale, you two getting together.
It is a fairy tale. We met in Sydney working in the hotels. Tracy was working nights, I was working days, and now we work day and night together.
It's very much like that, but this way we get to spend all our time together.
But and you don't need the publicity because you have crowds of people arriving at your stores on the weekend.
We do. We do have amazing queues. The shortest queues at the moment are in Mittagong, so if you want to check out the Mittagong store, it's probably your best bet. And there's lots of parking.
Yeah, I've tried to get a cake from one of your shops before, and the line was out the door. So I can't imagine what it's going to be like after this weekend.
I'm sure it'll be frantic, and our locals will be very upset, but so be it.
And is it, so patisserie, so is it on along a French style? Is that how you guys were trained?
Yeah, we're often accused of being French, but no, we're trained here in Australia. I trained under a Swiss master, and Vicky trained at the Sheridan Wentworth.
Okay, and so what's your speciality then? What's the number one?
Mirefeuille is our biggest seller, probably about 200 units a day. Just classically made, handmade cream patisserie, butter puff pastry, perfectly finished, nicely balanced.
Right, okay. But you also do the sausage rolls as well, I gather?
Yeah, the sausage rolls are, like, so good. They're, like, everyone's favourite. Right. But the milfoy is Tracy's favourite to make, so right. I must say.
It is. It's just, it requires precision, and I'm all about precision.
But you're not sick of making 200 a day for however many years?
No, I actually enjoy it. It sounds a bit weird, but...
And I guess, too, in terms of your business, so if you were a business wanting to set up a cake store in regional New South Wales, and the essence for you really was about the quality, but also you have to have the through traffic, you're also focused on tourism as well.
Yeah, and we also thought it would be a great spot to raise a family, to tell you the truth. That was one of the big decisions that we made.
Yeah, cool climate was first. Great spot to raise a family. And the opportunity. There's so much opportunity in rural Australia.
Well, that's the thing too. You need to have that sort of that background where you have the really good training, where you have the really strong sort of the chef background to go into something like that and then expand it from there.
Yeah. So yes, it was. So obviously we did traditional apprenticeships and then did a few years in the hotels learning our craft, but then just took the plunge and had the bravery to move to a regional area. And just have a go. And hard work gets you everywhere. The harder the work, the luckier we get, and that's just so true.
Do you find that the bricks and mortar shops are valued more in the regions?
Yeah, definitely. And when we first went down there, we couldn't find any tradesmen, so we decided back 25 years ago we'd train our own, so which is probably the achievement we're most proud of. We've had 22 apprentices finish and qualify, and we've got in the Mittagong store, we've got a massive apprentice wall of fame. So they get their photo on the wall when they start and qualified stickers all over their face when they finish.
Right.
Because that is a problem for a lot of towns. A lot of the young people in the towns often have to move away to get specialist training. It's so important to have businesses like yours, I suppose.
Yeah, it is, but we also have people from other regional centres move to us to do their training with us, which we're really proud of.
Mm. And with that whole issue about training up, and you've got 70 staff, so we're not talking about a small operation here.
We tried to start out small, but it's sort of grown. And yeah, as I said, we're actually quite proud of the tradesmen we've produced who are now also training their own apprentices.
Mm. And also, I wanted to talk about the fact that moving into the business side of things. Now you've got one of your kids is keen on the cooking, but maybe the business side for some of the others. So there's something for everyone.
We've raised four children while having a business, and people say, how do you do that? And in all honesty, children are easy compared to business. And our oldest and youngest have chosen to follow our trade, but the middle two are off at university, and one's doing business, and one's doing communications and marketing. So we're like set. We're so happy.
And no thoughts of actually moving into a franchise or anything like that? Just keep it
small? No, we don't want to lose that beautiful quality that we have. So unless my son does something crazy, no.
Right.
We'll just stay pretty much the size we are.
Okay, and we've seen the medal. It's very impressive. The medal is the President's Medal, so it's, incredible.
We're very proud of it. It's a great honour. We were very shocked last night.
Yeah.
Overwhelmed.
You didn't think you had a chance?
No, we didn't really think we had a chance. All the competitors were amazing. The finalists, we were just like blown away that we were amongst such amazing businesses. So, yeah, we were pretty stoked when they called out Gumnut.
Mm, amazing. Well, congratulations. Fantastic. And Hugh will be there on the weekend. And we're getting some cakes.
I bet I'll go to the Mittagong store. Is that right? Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks for your time with the Country Hour today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
It's coming up to 11 minutes past 12.
The New South Wales Country Hour with Michael Condon on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And Hugh, it's Thank a Farmer Day today, and you were headed out and about. You wanted to talk to some of the punters, some of the city punters, about what it means to them.
That's right, because it is an important part of the show, the agricultural aspect. But you do wonder these times, are people just coming for the sideshow alley? Are they coming just for the show bag? So I went to find out.
Hi, I'm Vicky, this is Rob.
Yep.
Very well organised and volunteers. Yeah, we come through very quickly off the train, from Central. Tickets booked in, we're ready to go.
And obviously the theme of the show is an agricultural show. Why do you think that's important to have in Sydney, such a large agricultural show?
Oh, well, a lot of the tourists too don't realise.
The country comes to the city. Yeah, and the only one I've ever missed out in, I'm 72 years old, the only one I've missed out on was Last year. I've been to 70 shows.
It's Thank a Farmer Day here at the show on the Thursday. What do you think of that theme? Do you think it's important?
Definitely. Oh, especially now that we're in lockdown, that people can go out to the country.
We always support Australian stuff. Oh, yeah. We buy Australian everything, when we can.
Yeah, hi, I'm Ross. Live in Townsville, grew up in Tassie. I've always wanted to come to the Royal Easter Show and finally got the chance to come and have a look, and very interested in sort of the agricultural side, not so interested in show bags and sideshow alley, but it's good to see what's going on.
Well, that's the real point of the show originally, I guess.
Oh, exactly, connecting, letting rural people get a chance to show their wares, and the city folk to understand where their food comes from every day and the hard work goes into it. They do it hard, and the ups and downs I've just had the opportunity to travel around Australia and seen some fantastic agricultural operations, from dry land farming to the Ord River and Emerald and those sort of places, and met some wheat farmers in WA who do it, have some pretty tough years. So it's fantastic.
My name's Jean Smith, and I came to the show on Sunday as well as today. But what I liked about Sunday was that there wasn't as many people. It was really good, because the years, I've never missed the show. Never missed it, apart from last year.
Yeah, of course.
But because there wasn't as many people, I think they're only letting 60,000 in, it made a big difference. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Today at the show, it's Thank a Farmer Day. What do you think about that?
Oh, yes, I think that's terrific. Yeah, well, we've just done the Woolworths thing and heard all about where all the food comes from around Australia, and it's really interesting.
Yeah. What are your reactions to the show so far?
I've only been here about 20 minutes. I live locally, so I usually always come. I just love it. I love seeing all the farmer displays and the lifestyles. I was disappointed last year. I had some entries into the show last year that I didn't go ahead, obviously. So
She has won a second this year in crochet.
Would you enter?
I entered a cape, a crocheted cape, and I got second prize for best adult garment. So that was good. I was pleased with that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sasha and Ruby.
Hello.
That's the easiest question on the lot.
Whoops.
What's your real name?
My name's Ruby.
And I'm Sasha.
And we have only just got to the Easter show and we think it's so, so cool and all these displays are incredible.
And how they make everything out of food is really awesome.
It's unbelievable how big it was. I was not expecting it.
Yeah.
So is this your first time?
Yeah, yes. This is our first time.
And have you heard about the show before? Did you want to come and check it out?
Yes, yeah. I always have, but I didn't think Mum would let us. And then the other day she said, yes, we're going. And I was like, yay!
And today at the show is Thank a Farmer Day. Do you think that's an important theme to have?
Yes, because they do so much work for us and they always will because it's like a main part of Australian community.
They're a main key part of our lives. Without them, we would have no food at all.
There you go, Michael. Poor old Ruby. She was so excited. She forgot who she was.
She got her name.
She was beside herself.
With her sister. That's hilarious.
But there you go. So even lots of different age ranges there, all talking about still coming to the show to get that agricultural connection, which is great to see.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, talking about Thank a Farmer Day, now we just heard from the punters. We're joined now by Cecilia Logan, who's a foundation manager of the RAS, and also Yvette McKenzie, who's a sheep farmer and wool counsellor. Thanks for joining us on the Country Hour. Good afternoon.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks. So, thanks for having us.
And how successful has Thank a Farmer Day been, do you think?
Well, it's just started, so we've still got another few hours to go. But the Sydney Royal Easter Show is all about bringing the country to the city. And today, for Thank a Farmer Day, we hope to really highlight our farmers and all that they do for us.
And as a result, you're trying to raise some money. Tell us a bit about that. You've got a few fronts, really.
That's right. So the RAS Foundation, which I'm the manager of, we have the Ag Bag, which you would have heard about before.
Yes,
so we're selling that in the Home and Lifestyle Pavilion. And that's a bag of donated goods. All Australian-owned companies have donated that. It's Australian-made, and we're selling it for $25. And the whole $25 goes back to rural and regional community grants projects.
And also the hay bale. Tell us about that. That's amazing, and that's happening as well.
Yes. So RAS councillor David Davidson from Young, he has donated a truckload of hay. So 23 ton of hay, and that's first prize in our raffle this year. So if you don't have enough guinea pigs at home or enough garden to use that hay, you could donate it to a drought or flood affected area, or to another organisation to re-raffle. We don't mind. That'll be drawn on Sunday, and second prize is a pair of RM Williams boots, and third prize is two nights at the Coogee Bay Hotel, and so on down to ninth prize. So you can find the link to that at rasf.org.au.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that. And, of course, that's Sunday it gets drawn.
Sunday, 4:15, that will be drawn on-site here at the Sydney Royal Easter Show at the truck, which is on Showground Road at the members' entrance.
Yes, it's on display there, isn't it? It's quite impressive. Now, the other thing, too, is it's always important to remember that there's going to be some part of New South Wales that is still in drought where they're still going to need some hay.
That's right. We say that, you know, what we do, we help fire, flood or drought-affected parts of New South Wales. And unfortunately, that's every year that seems to be nearly most of New South Wales. There's always something happening, isn't there?
Yeah, there is indeed. And you've also been active in helping out some local communities and giving out some money as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this year's winners are from Cumnock. We're helping get the kitchen up to speed in Cumnock.
Right.
The Inverell Community Garden, unfortunately the local council took that back, so they're having to move that, and so we're contributing to that. We're doing some portable staging for the Lockhart Showground. We're fixing up the floor of the community hall in North Star, and we're building some toilet amenities at Uarbri. So they lost their community hall in the Sir Ivan fires in 2017.
Right. Yep.
So they've managed to get a shed up, but they don't have any toilet facilities. So they've applied to us, and I can say that they're very excited about getting their new loos.
Okay, so absolutely. And of course, running the gambit there, you're talking about the communities hit by drought, bushfires, floods, you name it, and you're, the foundation is there to try and help out.
That's right.
Terrific. Thanks very much for joining us on the Country Hour today. I'll get you to hang around a moment, because one of the things we wanted to also do was put the spotlight on producers that and the way in which producers have been doing it pretty tough over the last few years or so. And Yvette McKenzie is a wool counsellor here for the RAS, but also on a farm at Bethungra. And I suppose it's important on Thank a Farmer Day to remember how tough the last 3 years really were for a lot of farmers.
Yeah, definitely. Michael, we seem to be some of the most resilient people there possibly is, I think, as farmers, but I think we're also the most passionate about what we do as well. So, but yeah, we seem to come up against everything every year, something different, but we just keep going.
And the drought affected your property big time, and then you had a lot of rain, and that caused its own problems.
Yeah, that's right. They say you only have one problem in a drought, and that's the feed issue. But in a good season, you seem to have every problem. And this year, we did have that drought, which impacted us by we had to sell sheep that we normally wouldn't sell, which reduced our numbers, which means now that we have to build our numbers up, which is even harder if you're a self-replacing flock. But then you get a wet season, and you have all the problems of flies, worms, and other issues. So it's one thing from to another, but you deal with it. You keep moving forward, one foot in front of the other, and keep going.
But how important is it to have things like the foundation? Is it to have the Royal Show where people are thanking a farmer, and it's a reminder?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing in the job that the RASF do for communities. And I know a lot of the show societies really appreciate what they do. It's something that wouldn't happen off their own back and wouldn't happen at all if it wasn't for something like the foundation that can give back. And it's really nice as a councillor to be able to see the impact that has on show societies and different areas that have been impacted by floods, fire, drought, whatever it may be, and just give them that positivity back again.
How important is it to have the Sydney Royal Easter Show and having that agricultural connection to people that wouldn't usually be exposed to it that live in Sydney?
I think it's really important. It's about a full education, especially to the young kids who don't know where their produce comes from. And we're all involved in education somewhere along the line, and the miscommunication of some of it. So we're here to put it straight. And on the showgrounds here, we are like one big family that work here, and exhibitors come back and we are one family. It might be the only time we catch up, but we're all here for the same reason.
And you had 2 years without being able to catch up as well, so it's even important from that point of view.
Absolutely, and it has been great. I've had the merinos in already and they've gone home, but having the phone calls and the messages saying thank you is so important to hear on my point of view, but knowing that they're still committed as much as we are is amazing.
And Cecilia, I was just going to come back to you. So getting the message out during COVID too, there was the message getting out that the food was coming from farmers to help people. They were sitting at home, they were huddled in there. They were concerned about the access to food in the supermarkets. But again, that was a good reminder of what farmers actually do.
Absolutely. And, you know, we need to look out for those who grow our food and fibre. It's really important. And I think COVID brought that home for us. Mm. You know, we need to be self-sufficient as a country, and we need to be able to look after our own.
And we did seem to hear that talk. That was a message that came out of COVID, wasn't it? Loud and strong. Yeah. And just going back to the season now, we talked about the fact that, you know, everyone says, oh, and a lot of city people think it's rained, the drought's over. What happened at your place? Just take us through, because it's quite, people wouldn't normally understand what might have happened at your place.
Going back to February last year, it was very dry where I was, and we had made the hard decision to sell using lamb that normally we would keep and go through the lambing and have the lambs hit the ground. But we had to make the decision to let them go early, which impacts us in a lot of ways, because one, we've got 300 less ewes that we've got to sell later on. We've got potentially 300 to 400 lambs that would normally hit the ground as well that we would take through as ewes and breeders further on. Mm. And then you've got to replace that as well.
Well, they're almost impossible to replace.
Absolutely.
Them,
the price is exceptional at the moment, which is fantastic on one side of things, don't get me wrong. But on the other side of things, quality, then you have to rebuild again. Mm. And that's the hardest thing that you can do. Once you've lost quality stock that may have gone through meatworks or whatever, you can't replace them. And it takes a long time.
In fact, when we were up at Tamworth, that was what people were saying. We've got plenty of grass and no stock. That's a familiar tale.
Absolutely. You sort of come around like 18 months later and here I am thinking I should have kept those ewes. But the decisions you make are based on that at the time. So if it doesn't rain, you can't say it's going to rain again. We all know it's going to rain again. But when? Financial impact, the ground impact, you've got to think about that at the time. So you don't really have a lot of choices sometimes.
And you also had the issue with the flies as well and fly strike and that sort of thing, even though you're trying to decrease the amount of mulesing you do. The fly situation, they seem to be bred up at the end of the drought.
It has been massive, absolutely massive. And I know, talking to my father who's been on the land all his life, and he said, you know, really he's only seen this once or twice in his lifetime, a season of fly strike as bad as what it is. And in the last 12 months, unfortunately, I've had to learn how to use a handpiece, which is something I didn't really want to do. Mm. But unfortunately, that's the scheme of things, and I've actually learned to do it. So that's just what it takes.
And sometimes that's just what you have to do. Thank you very much for joining us on the Country Hour, Cecilia, and also Yvette on the Country Hour. It's coming up to 25 past 12.
The New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
And joining us now, we're talking about draft horses, working draft horses that have come all the way from Lake Cajeligo. Paul Bandy has joined us now, and thanks very much for joining us on the Country Hour. Good afternoon to you. Thanks for having us.
How are you?
Very well indeed. Now, tell us about these horses. They are so popular here at the show. I mean, there's something about them. What is it about them that people love so much?
I think them being the big gentle giants that they are, people just love to have them around and be around them.
Mm.
And it's amazing to see how many you've got yoked up there or harnessed up there. Take us through your setup.
Yeah, so we have 11 horses here, which is not a lot for us. We have a festival down in Borellan in October, and we had 32 yoked up for that festival. So we'll come back next year with about 17, 20 horses for next year for Sydney Royal. So.
And do you use them back at Lake Cajeligo?
Yeah, so the team here is made up of horses from Lake Cajeligo and Borellan. And yes, they're both used. At Lake Cajeligo, they do a lot of chaff cutting and ploughing and things like that. And at Borellan, we do a lot of ploughing and things like that for them too.
And it's not just one driver, it takes a whole team. It's a team of horses and a team of people to run it.
It does. It takes. So we have a brake man, which is very important, so the wagon doesn't run up the back of the horses or run down a hill on us. And then we've got a couple of drivers to keep control. More so for safety here, like a team of 11 horses, one driver would drive them, no worries at all. But just for safety reasons, we've got two drivers here. So,
and they're not difficult to handle. They're very placid, are they, generally?
Yeah, very placid, very, very well educated. You know, to come to something like this, they have to be exposed to noises and fireworks and everything else to the public. So they're very well trained.
And do you do that in the breeding, or you do that in the handling, or how does that come about?
It comes down to both. It firstly is the breeding side of it. We only breed from stock that are well-handled and well-temperamented horses and good conformation. And then it comes down to the breaking in and the handling of the horses, which takes us, you know, up to 3 or 4 years to get them to the standard that they are, that they could come here and do what they're doing now.
Yeah, because they are exposed to a lot of noise here that they would never have back in Lake Cajeligo.
Oh, of course, you know, fireworks for number one, you know. I think we've got about 15 minutes between the horses ending and the fireworks going off. So a couple of nights, you know, we've still had them in harness when the fireworks have gone off here at Sydney, and it hasn't worried them, you know. So.
And you mentioned the constitution there, and I guess with such a big animal and such a powerful animal, you have to make sure that that's just right too, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Conformation is a big thing for a big horse like that. You know, you've got to have big feet for a start. That's your pulling power, your big feet, big chest, deep girth, you know. So you've got to have really good conformation for a horse to be able to work.
And how big do they get? I mean, you know, what's the biggest one you see?
So they get up to about 700 kilos, 17, 18 hands.
Yep.
The Percheron mares that we've got here, she would be 18 hands and probably 800 kilos.
Right, okay.
Is it the nostalgia of it? Is that what people love about them? What is it that...
Yeah, I think that is. And saying that, the Clydesdales have made a comeback, you know. Before, people were giving Clydesdales away. Now you can't buy a Clydesdale for $5,000 or $6,000 anymore because they're so popular. A lot of the riding adult riding groups are taking on the Percherons. They're crossing the Clydesdale and Percheron for eventing and show jumping. So Yeah, they're being used in a lot of different areas, the Clydesdales now.
Show jumping? Really? Yeah. They're good jumpers?
Yeah, so a third cross of a Clydesdale for a show jumper with a warm blood or a thoroughbred, they're jumping very well because they've got that big back end. That's the power for the show jumping.
Right.
Yeah, amazing. And what sort of stuff do you do with your Clydesdales back in Lake Jelligo? Is it mainly the draft stuff?
Yeah, so we show a few. We have a couple here that we show, but mostly the working Clydesdale. We breed for the working side of it now, which, as I said, you know, we have the festival in October at Borella on the long weekend, and that's what we aim for. We do a lot of binding and a lot of ploughing and all those sort of things at the festival in October. So, yeah.
Paul Bandy, appreciate it. They're magnificent horses and incredible. So thanks for joining us on the Country Hour today.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Paul Bandy, who's from Bandy and Johnson Working Draft Horse Team at Lake Cajeligo. Before we head to the details of what's happening in the news, let's turn to the Easter sales situation. The Scone Thoroughbred breeder Yarraman Park has had one of the finest ever Easter yearling sales. The stallion there, I'm Invincible, was finishing as the leading sire by grossing over $25 million from 41 lots sold a year after being forced into a virtual auction at the height of COVID-19. The people and horses returned to the sale complex in Sydney, and over $132 million was traded during the 2 days at a staggering 88% clearance rate. Okay, that would have to be a record, I reckon. Arthur Mitchell is a part owner of the Yarraman Stud where the sire I'm Invincible stands. He said there was an expectation that the sale would be solid, but nowhere near what it was like.
Yes, he seemed to now have just sort of taken it to the next level. I think he had 6 out of the top 10 highest priced lots. So he's never been anywhere near that before. So, I mean, yeah, no, he's been amazing, and you know, they're lovely looking and people want to buy them. Yeah, it's very exciting.
They buy them because of the performances of the offspring on the track. Is that predominantly what it's about?
They buy them because they're very good looking, they're athletes, and they perform on the track. And he's a very good stallion. And now he's covering arguably the best mares in the country, or many of them. So they've got lovely pedigrees, they can run by him, so that they're sort of collector's item, and that's what they're paying for them.
The stud has had success in the past, and it continues to do so. And you mentioned that the local money, the domestic money in Australia, has been driving these prices up this time. Is it because of that discussion we've had many times before about prize money generally and the interest in a share of a racehorse through syndication?
100%, absolutely. Prize money in this country is fantastic, especially in this state. Syndication has been, you know, a marvellous thing. It lets everyone have a chance to own a share in a horse. All that's it. And funny you mentioned, the year we had the good big sale was 2008. And it was Sheikh Mohammed of Dali taking on a chap called Eustace from South Africa. And they went head-to-head. But there, you know, two foreigners, you know, and this year it seemed to be mainly locals. So you know, times have changed.
That's Arthur Mitchell at the Yarraman Stud. So they had an incredible Easter yearling. So 88% clearance rate. Well, I reckon that'd have to be close to a record if it isn't a record. Let's find out what's happening now on the Country Hour with the news headlines. Adam Storey's there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael. Well, the Premier says she's confident the border bubble with New Zealand can be maintained despite a new COVID-19 case in Auckland. A 24-year-old hotel quarantine worker has tested positive, but there's no evidence of community transmission and the man apparently lives alone. The Prime Minister says he's hoping to receive advice from local health authorities over blood clot concerns with the AstraZeneca vaccine. The European Medicines Agency says it's found a possible link between the vaccine and rare clotting issues, and the UK will now give people under 30 the option of a different vaccine. Meanwhile, the federal government says legislative changes will allow employers to sack workers for sexual harassment. The government will adopt either in part or in full all the recommendations that were made in a national harassment report that was released more than a year ago. The Australian Antarctic Division is sending a support ship to the Southern Ocean to assist a stricken resupply vessel. The MPV Everest came to grief on Monday when a fire broke out in its port engine. It's relying on an auxiliary starboard engine and is about 1,700 nautical miles from Fremantle. And police say golfer Tiger Woods was driving at nearly double the speed limit before a crash that left him seriously injured in February. The County Sheriff's Office in Los Angeles says Woods' car was travelling at more than 130 kilometres an hour when it ran off the road. And there'll be more news at 1 o'clock, Michael.
But he's not getting a ticket, they reckon.
Oh, that doesn't surprise me.
But your tip was that he was on his phone. But, he was speeding. Yeah.
Maybe he was speeding and on the phone. I'm yet to see evidence he wasn't on the phone.
Which we have to remind our listeners is not a good thing.
No. It's in fact, actually illegal, I think, in some parts.
All right, Adam, thanks for that. In most parts.
Yeah, in most parts.
In all parts, yeah. All right, thanks, Adam.
Okay.
Adam's story there with the news headlines. Let's find out what's happening with the weather now. Stephen Stefanak at the Bureau, good afternoon. Seem to have trouble getting to Stephen at the Bureau. You there, Stephen? Oh, we seem to have a problem with Stephen. We might try and get back to Stephen at the Bureau a little bit later on. But before we do that, let's look at some politics now, because Clarence Town construction manager and father of four, David Lazell, has been pre-selected as the New South Wales Nationals candidate for the May 22nd Upper Hunter by-election at a meeting in Singleton last night. And already Mr. Lazell has rejected accusations the National Party is all about supporting coal mines. He spoke with Mike Pritchard this morning, who asked him what his plans are to advocate for both the mining industry and the agriculture industry in that seat.
We've got some fantastic industry in our region, and I'm passionate about agriculture, and we have our crops at the moment. They're taking sorghum up on the Liverpool Plains at the moment. We've got some great cattle country. We've got our horse studs. We've got great wine industry, and of course, the big power economically is coal, and mining in our region really is driving, economic development here, and there's a lot of jobs, and I'm particularly feel strongly about the support industry around coal. There's a lot of small businesses that rely on those mines, and there's a lot of people out there who rely on the work that the mines give them, and that's a great thing for our region, because families can be sure of the fact that this region will be strong now and a long time into the future.
Can you get that balance right?
Well, I think we can, Mike. I think we can. I think one of the things is we are smart enough to be able to work out that land use balance. As long as, the mines can't run roughshod over our agricultural land, we've got to protect our agricultural land. And there's, we have some of the best land in the world. So that's really important, because that's going to be here for 1,000 years. But at the same time, we can make sure that the mines can exist, and we'll allow them to exist as long as they're respectful of their fellow neighbours and of our town.
Now, you mentioned that you would like to walk the line, you would like to see the mining industry and agriculture working together. But I understand last night when the meeting was on to decide on a candidate for the National Party in this election, there's been some criticism from your own members that you are becoming a mining party. That was the words they described to us.
I don't think we're a mining party at all. I think we're a small business party. And as part of a small business party, you're looking after farmers who are small business. You're looking after the tradesmen. They're small business. You're looking after the coffee shops. They're small business. And we're looking after all those little industries that work in the mine. So I don't think we're, for all the big big mining companies, I think we're about all those little businesses that support, that get to work, and their whole business is supporting the coal industry.
So is it the reason then, that support, that you're with John Barilaro today when he wants to introduce you and you have decided to go to a coal mine to do just that?
Yes, we are doing a visit to the coal mine today, and there's no doubt that mining is important to this region. So they are one of the biggest industries. We're going out there today, and it should be a great day.
David Lazell he's been pre-selected as the New South Wales Nationals candidate for the the Hunter by-election seat that's coming up in the Upper Hunter. You're listening to the Country Hour. It's coming up to 21 minutes to 1. Let's go back to the Bureau, see if we can get hold of Stephen again. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Good afternoon, Michael.
Yes, yeah, so there's some gremlins in the system, but we seem to have worked it out. So just briefly run us through what we can see today and the next few days in terms of weather.
Well, today we've got plenty of sunshine in the west and most of the south of the state, but we've got those showers and storms lingering on along central and northern parts of the coast and the adjacent ranges. Those showers and storms looking like easing by later today as that low over the Tasman moves away to the southeast. But then we've got this cold front approaching from the Southern Ocean, and ahead of that we'll see some warmer temperatures over the next couple of days, starting with today in the southern districts, the southern inland districts and the western, reaching the low 30s out in the upper western and lower western this afternoon, and also parts of the Riverina district. Those warmer temperatures spread more towards the northern inland and northeast tomorrow, so we'll see low to mid-30s across much of the northern inland of New South Wales for maximum temperatures, and even around parts of the coast in the high 20s or maybe possibly 30 degrees along the coast tomorrow along central and northern coast. But with that cold front approaching, we're not going to see much in the way of rainfall. A prefrontal trough tomorrow might generate a shower too in the southeast of the state. Then as the cold air hits later Saturday into Sunday, we might see some alpine snow about as well, late Saturday into Sunday for the alpine peaks, going for above about 1,200 metres at this stage over the Alps. And we've also got some windier conditions with this front as well. In the southeast tomorrow, we should get some windier conditions, but by Sunday, the windier conditions will spread much more across the state, and it'll feel quite chilly as well with the wind chill around. But as those winds ease into Monday, it's set up for some early frost along the right along the ranges for Monday morning.
Much of the inland.
What's that? Sorry.
Not extending that frost too much into the inland. This may be around the higher elevation.
Mostly confined to along the ranges and sort of the valleys about the ranges at this stage. So not expecting much on the way inland for that frost at this stage. So I'd say along the ranges and possibly parts of the western slopes might see a little bit of frost. And this stage it looks set for Monday morning to be the coldest, but we'll keep an eye on that. We're kind of heading to sort of winter pattern, so we've got this high coming across early next week. And then there's another front which comes through like Wednesday to Thursday next week. And at this stage, again, it doesn't look like much in the way of rainfall with it, apart from a shower too in southeastern parts of the state and dry across the remainder of the state as the front hits next Wednesday to Thursday. And, it kind of looks like this sort of pattern at the moment. We're setting where we get a front, we get some colder temperatures and then bit of settled weather and another front sort of as we head in towards winter.
Bit of a winter pattern setting in, which the grain growers will be looking forward to. Thanks for that, Stephen.
Thank you, Michael.
Stephen Stefanak at the Bureau there. It's coming up to 19 minutes to 1.
You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Now, Hugh Hogan is with me here at the Country Hour, broadcasting from the show again from the Pig and Goat Pavilion. And Hugh, our next guest, it's interesting to note that the drought has affected a lot of people throughout New South Wales, and even when we're talking about mohair, as you were the other day, and alpacas too.
Yeah, alpacas as well. We're at the Goat and Pig Pavilion, as you've said. We're joined by Karen Burns, who is an alpaca farmer from Ralston, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, yeah.
And the pigs and goats are very popular today. How are the alpacas going?
The alpacas are very, very popular, they always are. We always have some babies as well, plenty of crias around and lots of crowds down there. We've had schools comp this morning, so that's gone very well as well this morning.
And we've been hearing from some farmers affected by the drought over the last couple of years, and a lot of the focus goes onto the cattle and the sheep, as it always does, but there's a big impact on your alpaca farm as well.
Yeah, there is, and we guess we have trouble with feed is our main thing. I know we're still in drought at Ralston. We still haven't got any feed on the ground. We're bare dirt, which makes it really hard, and trying to then source feed from all over the place, which of course then brings in the weeds, but takes its toll on everybody.
So driving around not far from you, there's plenty of grass around. Are you been able to find some adjustment and things like that?
We've been able to find some. I think I'd love to be able to see the councils, especially in time of drought, maybe getting together a register, because there's so much land out there that isn't used for farming anymore, that you drive past and you see paddocks that never have animals in it, full of feed, that you could be paying the owner to adjust your animals.
That's right, especially around that sort of mudgy area. It's become so popular with people from Sydney. Yeah, there would be a lot of unused sort of hobby farms, those lifestyle blocks, which have exploded in popularity, especially during COVID. We've also been talking today just about, it's Thank a Farmer Day. How do you feel it's going? And do you feel like the message is cutting through to the people at Sydney who are coming to see your alpacas today?
Yeah, I think it is. It all disappears very quickly, though. As soon as we get rain, unfortunately, everybody in the city thinks, oh, great, everyone's out of drought, everybody's fine, and they don't realise that it takes a lot more than just one downpour to get you out of drought. And I think a lot of farmers do tend to feel forgotten in that sense by the city, that it just takes more than one rain event to break a drought, unfortunately.
I was just going to say, it's a timely reminder that there are parts of the state that are still hit and still affected and still need feed. And there's that big hay bale. Have you gone in for the raffle? You could win that.
Oh, no, I haven't heard about that one. I'll have to go find the hay bale raffle for sure.
The hay bale raffle, yeah. No, it's getting... Sunday?
25 tonnes up for grabs on Sunday.
There you go.
Definitely, I'll have to go find that raffle for sure.
Put your hand up for some of that, I reckon, for sure. Now, the other thing that I was interested in, we were hearing about how astronomical the prices have been for mohair. What about, you know, in terms of alpacas, are we seeing good pricing?
Yeah, the demand's still there. Yeah. The demand's still there. I know there's a container getting ready to leave. It was supposed to leave last Friday, but everybody got busy here with Sydney Royal. So the containers are certainly still going out, and the demand is definitely still there for alpaca.
Mm. The mohair breeders were telling me just the other day that in COVID a lot of people took up knitting, and that was contributing to the price. Right? Are you seeing the same thing with alpaca?
Yeah, we're getting a lot more home spinners, and those sort of people that want to, because they're sitting homes, they want to knit, they want to spin. So as well as going out to the big corporations, there's a lot more going to locally, where they're wanting to buy local, they want to buy something from Australia and do it at home while they're stuck in COVID.
Is that more rewarding for you as a producer, just sell raw product to locals?
Definitely. We've got a local store in town in Candos, and we sell directly to the public, and we love that when the buses come from Sydney and they buy our product direct and cut out the middleman, and they actually see on their wool label, they get the picture of the alpaca it's come off and where it's been born, and a lot of people really love that these days, to actually know where it all came from.
It's interesting, because people seem to be interested in the story, the connection with the animal. It's important.
Yeah, they love it. That's why we added that to our own wool labels, because people can get a photo of the animal, they see where it's been born and bred, and if they want to come and visit us and see the animal in the paddock, we're more than happy for them to come out and see it, and then they bring their jumper they've finished out with them, and they then get to pat the alpaca that their jumper came off.
Amazing. Incredible. Yeah. And so in terms of the drought, so breeding... way, way down for you because you just don't have the feed?
Yeah, we didn't breed for about 4 or 5 years. I mean, alpacas take 11 and a half months to have a baby, so it takes a long time to get your stock back up. But we didn't breed for 4 or 5 years because the drought has just been so bad. So we had 5 this year, which is wonderful to have 5 bubs this year. But it's going to take us a long time to get back up to our... We've sort of always tried to sort of be doing 80 and 100, and we're way down below 50 at the moment.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on the Country Hour today. I hope you get some rain soon, and hopefully you can get back up to those normal numbers of alpacas that you love and used to.
Great. Thank you. Thanks.
And it's 13 to 1.
You're listening to the New South Wales Country Hour on ABC Radio New South Wales.
Now, we can't come to the Royal Show without talking about the CWA and talking about CWA scones. And we're joined now in regards to this issue by... Rowena Casey, who's in charge this year. Good afternoon. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you.
Now, we heard before that there was a push on again, that maybe we try and break another record. Is that... No, is that going to happen this year? There's so few people in terms of what they normally
is.
We're
trying very
hard. You're trying, okay.
And I've brought you the scone tally here.
Right, what's the tally? Where are we?
Yesterday was our biggest day so far, 3,771. And so our tally to date is 23,881. So it's a great effort. Because we are
track.
A little bit short of volunteers, but the ladies are all stepping up. And we're doing our best. And it was just wonderful the first couple of days. People, when they came in, they'd say, oh, it's so good to be back. Mm-hmm. And so the patrons were so happy to be back. And our volunteers and the CWA committee, they were all thrilled to be back. We really missed last year.
And you see a lot of RAS people in there as well, popular with all the show
comes.
People. Yeah,
well, we've had some VIPs through this morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yesterday VIPs, because we had the showgirls came, some at 2:30 and some at 3:30. So we sat down and had afternoon tea, and then I took them around to show them
what happens behind the scenes. And they're all lovely girls. We really enjoyed chatting to them. And, of course, some of our committee, who come from all over the state, were delighted to find their showgirl. So, yes, that was really, really nice. So lots of lovely things have happened along with running the tea room.
Now, you were saying about the tally, not quite on track to beat the record,
maybe
a little bit
quite.
Low.
You see, okay. Our record was 2017 when we were a 14-day show, 53,872. And then I thought, well, I'd better really adjust that to make it relevant for 12 days. So the 12-day record was from 2019, 49,977. And we do have a daily record, which was Good Friday 2018, when we made 5,124.
Mm.
And so actually, I shouldn't say made. It's what we sell or what we give away. That excess doesn't count. But sometimes it does because, you know, a lovely young man came in the other night just to clean the bin out. And I asked him who he was, and he was Joey's student. So he was delighted to take home 24.
I'm sure he was. Well, there's still a week to go on the show. Maybe if we get a big push from everyone, we can still get there.
That'd be marvellous.
Yep, you do your best for me, please.
That's what we need to do now. And a lot, you go through lots of flour, lots of cream, lots of jam, I would imagine, like a huge amount.
Oh, we do. But we're very blessed. Manildra Flour donate 2.5 tonnes, but they're so generous. There's probably 3 tonnes in the room. And Pepe's Beautiful Butter and the Little Big Dairy from Dubbo, they're our latest partnership with them. And Sunshine Sugar and Nestle. So we're really blessed.
And an exit on regional produce as well coming in too.
Yes,
so that's important
yes.
as well.
And ladies all around the state make jam and cakes. So they're sold on our promotional table. Along with our cookbooks, and I've had to order more cookbooks, I've had to order more aprons, I've had to order more tea towels with the scone recipe and the relish recipe. So
I'll have to get one of those. I'm a big fan of the tea towels. Now, the other thing I was going to say, jam first and then cream? What's the way to go?
Look, you know, it just depends where you come from, but I have to say this year with this beautiful double cream that we're getting from the Little Big Dairy, it's like soft butter. It's gorgeous. So probably it's easier to put it on first. Whereas in past years, we've had to whip the cream. So that's maybe better on the top. But look, either way, the scone tastes delicious.
Very diplomatic answer there from Rowena Casey in CWA.
All right. Thanks for joining us on the program. You're listening to The Country Hour. It's coming up to 9:01.
On ABC Radio New South Wales, this is the New South Wales Country Hour.
Now, we just got a mention there, Hugh Hogan, about the showgirls and also rural achievers we were talking about a bit earlier on. And we're joined now by one of the showgirl finalists, Bronte Marshall from Moree. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me.
And also, you've got another hat as well. So you're also the vice president of the Moree Show Society. And that's really one of the things, that's one of the accents that you have, is to try and raise money for them.
That's correct. So for the Moree Show Society, I'm both the Vice President and the Showgirl Coordinator.
Right.
So both of those roles are 12-month roles, very busy. I absolutely love it. So one of my aspirations is changing the culture of the Moree Showgirl competition, trying to engage in the younger generation and, really just engaging the youth to become participants of the show naturally without having to push too hard.
Well, we were talking about that yesterday, Hugh, weren't we? Because there was that perception that there were many, many seasoned people involved in show societies, and they're trying to reduce the age, and obviously that's what you're trying to do at Moree.
That's right, and one of the things that I've changed about the showgirl competition is to do with the sashes. So I don't necessarily want to get rid of the showgirl name because it is tradition, but with the showgirl entrance, instead of saying showgirl entrance, I've put showgirl ambassadors. So trying to give that name a little bit more substance and responsibility to our showgirl entrance.
So what's changed? How has that showgirl ethos been modernised?
I think it has a lot to do with PR and how we advertise showgirl. So for me personally, I am not agriculturally passionate compared to some of the other girls, and I know that it's an ag movement, so I'm really trying to tap into all women with rural backgrounds doesn't matter if you were brought up on the farm, and it doesn't matter if you were just, you know, born in the country or the town. So I'm really trying to tap into women of all interests, all backgrounds. I've made an Instagram account for Moree, trying to get those videos and photos. Feedback is really important, so I've been contacting our past participants, trying to get feedback and changing the processes that we have in place.
Well, what about, with there's been this debate in federal parliament and also this debate about sexism as well, and sexism in the bush and in our parliament, New South Wales parliament as well, you know, how is that debate playing out in terms of as a showgirl, as a representative of the show?
That's a really interesting question. I know some of the shows in the past have actually trialled show boys. Didn't get a lot of interest, surprisingly. I think it's really important to have that representation of both sides, and I guess that's where the rural achievers really come in handy. So they do have, you know, the boys and the girls to have that representation in the country.
So where that's more likely to sort of take up those
Correct.
Sort of issues.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, we appreciate it. Good luck with the future, and are you raising some money for the Moree Showground as well in terms of COVID? You managed to get some extra funds here as well?
Absolutely. So I'm very fortunate to be a part of two community groups, theatre groups in Moree, where we raise profits for performances. So luckily we were able to perform 6 shows last year during COVID, which was absolutely fantastic to provide entertainment to the community when there wasn't a lot going on.
Yeah, it was definitely dry for entertainment out in the bush. Well, congratulations again. You're obviously doing great work out there at Moree, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much.
It's time for markets. To Wagga Sheep and Lambs, Leanne Dax.
Good afternoon. 34,000 lambs and just over 9,000 sheep were offered to a reduced field of buyers. Quality across extra heavy categories was outstanding, most grain assisted. Trade lamb quality was very mixed, with only the shorter skin lambs attracting the best domestic competition. Plainer lambs under 18 kilos carcass weight sold mostly to restockers, with processor competition very quiet. Trade lambs sold to fluctuating bidding, with prices firm to $6 cheaper. Heavy lambs were unchanged, while the extra heavies bounced $8 to $11. Trade lambs 21 to 22 kilo, 172 to 186, 22 to 24 kilo, 186 to 212, averaging 815 to 830 cents a kilogram carcass weight. 24 to 26 kilo, 202 to 218, 26 to 30 kilo, 213 to 254, over 30 kilos carcass weight, 244 to 293, merino trades 148 to 212, and lambs with weight and frame to feed on 164 to 207. I'm Leanne Dax for MLA.
Dubbo Cattle, David Monk.
Good afternoon. Numbers lifted by 1,800 for a yarding of 2,316. That was compared to the sale of 2 weeks ago, which was a very small rain-affected sale. We had a mixed yarding with a good selection of young cattle to suit the feeders and processors, along with good numbers of well-finished grown cattle. There was also a mixture of secondary cattle and weaners mixed throughout. Young cattle of the trade were dearer, with prime vealers selling to 486. Prime yearlings sold from 380 to 478. Feeder cattle were also considerably dearer, with the feeder steers selling from 392 to 488, while the feeder heifers sold to 459. Young cattle of the restockers were up to 40 cents dearer, with the young steers selling to 720 and the young heifers 642. Ground steers and heifers were 10 cents dearer, with the ground steers selling from 360 to 395. Prime ground heifers sold to 389. Cows were 5 cents dearer, with the secondary cows selling from 271 to 299. Prime heavyweight cows sold from 299 to 336 for a single C muscle cow. The heavyweight cows averaged 315 cents, and heavy bulls also sold to 315. This is David Monk reporting from Dubbo.
Yes, cattle, Graham Richard.
Good afternoon. Numbers increased to 990. The quality was very good, with a lot of heavy yearling steers and heifers offered. There were a few weaners selling to a keen restocking gallery and around 280, mainly 4-score cows. Young cattle sold to a much dearer trend, while the cows were cheaper. Calves sold between 620 and 685 and weaners reached 630. Medium weight steers were 20 to 30 cents dearer, with feeders paying 428 to 450 and restockers up to 516. Heavy feeders were 10 cents dearer, 386 to 474, and the trade paid to 498. Medium weight heifers to feed lifted 30, 436 to 456. The heavyweights gained 10, 380 to 444. Trade heifers 420 to 451. The grown steers reached 400 cents and heavy two-tooth heifers to feed on 390.
And Armidale cattle, James Armitage.
Good afternoon. A yarding of 535 head following a three-week break in sales. All categories represented. Quality was quite mixed. Small lines of good quality cattle along with secondary types. The usual processes attended. Restocking and feedlot activity strong. Comparing to the previous sale, most categories sold adeer trends. Vealers to restockers experienced strong gains. Steers up to 280 kilos, 478 to 662 cents a kilo. Heavyweight sold from 478 to 542. The lighter weight heifers 460 to 548, those over 280 kilos 410 to 480. Heavyweight yearling feeder steers 370 to 458 cents. Strong gains on medium weight yearling heifers 426 to 460 to feed. Heavyweights reach 446 cents.
And it's goodbye from the show.